It's a lot better than the 10 Zoom meetings you've been on today.
This may take a couple of days, maybe more.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000 and listen to Waddle and Sylvie on Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
From NBA action right here on ESPN 1000. Brooklyn and Milwaukee going at it. Game two of their series. No James Harden expected. The Nets took the opener 115-107. Also tonight, another series gets underway. Denver at Phoenix, trying to make connection with Nick Friedell. We'll get to him. But, hey, Brian, as we wait for him, let's see how many years ago this was. This was a long time ago. 1998. On this day in 1998. I won't even quiz you. I'll just play it for you. This is what happened.
One shot differential, so they're going to have to shoot it. But I guarantee you, Phil Jackson really doesn't care what they say. He doesn't want him to score here.
Stop pausing. Here we go.
If he could, he'd like for just to hold it and let this game get over with.
Wennington, the only Bull who hasn't scored, so let him do it. Well, the evening is complete. Every I has been dotted, every T has been crossed. Vaughn at the buzzer. A total humiliation for the Utah Jazz. Beaten by 42 and held to the lowest scoring output in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, that's not good. But, you know, they got Wennington his basket. So
that's all you really needed.
Yeah.
And having covered Bulls games in Salt Lake City, I don't know if it's still the case, but that was the nastiest crowd, I believe, in the league.
Was it really?
They were. You would not think that since the cathedral's right down the street, right?
Yes.
But I mean, the string of four letter words coming out of even the women's mouth. I was like, ooh,
yeah.
This is one rough crowd. I don't know. It was. I mean, you know, Philly has the reputation, but I always found the Utah Jazz crowd to be what you call edgy.
Yeah. You know, as we wait for Nick, we put up a poll. Sean, there's other polls up too, right? We put up a poll. We did it the other day, and we didn't really get to it. But because the NBA playoffs are going on, you had a poll that you wanted to talk about with the Bulls because, you know, everyone's watching people are watching. Actually, I looked and the ratings are up over last year and things like that. And last year was different because of you know, the bubble and everything else. But the poll for the Bulls is, if the Bulls could keep only one veteran, which one should it be? And obviously we're not talking about, you know, Zach or anything like that. So we listed Tomas Satoransky, Garrett Temple, Daniel Tice, or Thaddeus Young. So you can go to Twitter, at ESPN1000, and vote on that. And it's funny because I know we ran this over the weekend and we didn't really get to it and talk much about it. A lot of people like Thad Young, but Daniel Tice is amazing.
Yeah.
I loved watching him play.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, a big that plays defense has got some toughness to him. You can certainly make an argument. And I know Satoransky was getting no love at all, but tell me who the point guard's going to be next year.
Yeah.
I mean, he did more than a credible job running the point, running the offense when they asked him to do it.
Yeah.
I get Thaddeus, you know, the veteran presence, and he wants to stick around and all that. But they can't afford to keep everybody. And I know the bigger questions are, you know, are you going to pay Zach LaVine again and going to get him some help? And, you know, what are you going to do moving forward? And keeping one or two of these guys doesn't get you closer to a championship.
Right.
But it gives you, you know, if you don't keep any of them or whatever, you're trying to get some salary cap flexibility. Yeah. But they all fill different roles,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. And, you know, we would ask Nick, but I don't think Nick wastes any of his time watching Bulls basketball.
No, yeah. We do that.
Yeah. Nick Friedel wouldn't dare watch a Bulls basketball game. especially at this time of year. There's never a reason to watch. There's no Bills basketball ever at this time of year. Nick, what's going on, buddy?
Freddie, it's so good to hear y'all's voice. And at some point again in life, there will be important Bulls basketball. It's just taken a little bit for it to come back together. But all three of us know how cool it is when the UC is rocking and people are into that team in Chicago. So count me in the group that believes that it'll happen at some point.
3 years? 5 years? Can you give us a ballpark? Not just a play-in.
I'm going to go with they'll be back in the postseason in the next 3 to 4 years.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. I was hoping for a little sooner than that, but okay. Yeah.
I held up two fingers. So,
yeah. Yeah. I held up a different finger. Yeah.
What's happening? How are we doing?
So the playoffs now, I mean, you know, a lot of people say, well, okay, well, LeBron's out. That's not going to be good for the NBA. But the NBA going in, I mean, I don't know. It's not a huge surprise that LeBron and the Lakers are out, is it?
No. And Freddie, from a league standpoint, it's not good that LeBron's not in. From a ratings standpoint, Steph's not in. That hurts too. And the Warriors, they have such a following. But if you're a pure basketball fan, these playoffs are going to be great. These playoffs are made for you. I mean, everybody is focused on what's not there. I'm telling you, there's going to be some good series, especially with that Nets Bucks series. I think that's looking really good with Harden's availability in question. I think this Suns Nuggets series is going to be good, and Jazz Clippers has some intrigue as well. So I think there's plenty of interesting notes. It's just a matter of not focusing on the stars that we're so used to seeing, but there are some damn good teams in here. And I fully expect the basketball to be entertaining over the next few weeks.
And look, Trae Young, I didn't think he would have this kind of postseason success. I didn't know what kind of career he'd have. A good one. I didn't know how good he was going to be when he got drafted. But here he is announcing himself with the 35-plus points a game with the last four or whatever. Luka Doncic. What does Dallas do? Does Mark Cuban have to go on Shark Tank and find him some help there? I mean, I mean there are some great stars here, and then you got Pat Riley saying he'll leave a key to the facility for LeBron if he wants to come back to Miami. But there are some great young stars who they need help in Dallas, and maybe Trey doesn't need that much help in Atlanta. They're going to surprise people.
Brian, I mean, let me be amongst the. The people who are coming on saying, I never expected Trae Young to do this. I remember when he came in for that Bulls workout a few years ago, and everybody knew he could shoot, but I did not think he could lead a team even at this point so soon. So the fact that he's done that in Atlanta, and Travis Schlenk, who was just getting crushed for some of the moves that he made, and Lloyd Pierce was struggling in his couple years there, and then Nate McMillan comes in, and he's really turned everything around. That Atlanta team is more than just Trae Young, but he has been much, much better than I thought he could be, for sure. Now, as far as the Mavericks go, I don't know what the hell Cuban's going to do, because that Porzingis deal is awful. He's got another few years on it, and for as great as Luka is, I mean, when you look at the rest of that roster, Tim Hardaway Jr. is pretty solid, but there are not a lot of guys that you look at and go, okay, well, everybody is going to grow together, and all of a sudden this team that got bounced in the first round really is going to have a shot at a title. I don't believe that. I don't know what Cuban's going to have to do, but he's going to have to get really creative. But guys, the name that I don't think is drawing enough attention right now, but could over the next 6-7 weeks, Donovan Mitchell. I mean, Utah just did not get a lot of hype. That Jazz team people know they're good. They see the record, but I don't think they're watching them day in, day out. That team can shoot the hell out of the ball. And if he takes another step in his career, and he played really well against Memphis, but if he gets going here, I think this is a guy who can lead a team to the finals. And I think Utah has a legit chance to get all the way through and make some noise once they get in there.
Let me ask you a question. I'm just looking at the box scores from yesterday's games, okay? What is it with scoring, team scoring 70 points in the first half and then struggling to get to 50 in the second half?
Freddie, that is a great question that I can't figure out either. It's like it doesn't equate defensively, and it was my biggest criticism throughout this strange pandemic year that we've all watched.
Right.
Is you'd see teams just go through the motions early, and early in the year they were going through the motions late. It was like the intensity of an all-star game throughout the first half of that year. But I think what we've seen, and this, I don't know if it's the right answer, but what I've been watching, everybody's kind of going through trying to find their rhythm early in these games. And it's like the second half hits and the light goes on and the players go, all right, we're in the playoffs. Let's try to play some defense now.
Okay.
And so that's the only thing I can think, is that the intensity gets ratcheted up to a point where everything starts to feel different and guys start to turn it on that end of the floor more.
I'm looking at Atlanta had 47 threes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and then they had to hang on.
Yeah, they had to hang on to win by four.
Yeah, they had a 25-point lead.
Yeah.
Back to the Bulls for a second, Nick. You know, you said 3 to 4 years will be a playoff team. You know, I remember eons ago, John Paxson said, we judge ourselves around here by winning championships. And we go back 1998, it's a long way, a lot of dust on those trophies. How... with the new brain trust and, you know, some of the moves we saw them make at the trade deadline and all that, I mean, how far away are they from contending to win the East even? I mean, it's one thing to get just be a bottom-tier playoff team, and we've seen those over the years with the Bulls. But, you know, the idea is to win championships, and it just seems they are eons away from that.
Brian, I think it's a gigantic, gigantic margin to go from where the Bulls are to talk of even getting near the top of the East. I mean, this is a team that is way, way far away. And I know that, you know, I talk to my friends still all the time in the organization. They are confident in the direction that Karnisovas and Eversley have taken them. But guys, let's get real. When you trade for Nikola Vucevic, who I like, and I mean, Freddie, we've talked about him off and on, I know, for years because of all those Magic games I watch. I like him. I think he can play, but he is not a marquee all-star. He's a very solid player. But Brian, this goes back to what you guys were talking about when I came in there. Like, Zach LaVine, he has improved. I think he's a very, very good offensive player. But there's a difference between being an all-star and making the all-star team.
Yep.
And if you're the Bulls and you now have to be on the hook potentially to give LaVine $200 million over the next few years to pair him with Vucevic, like, that's a playoff team, but that is not a team that is anywhere near going to the finals and being in true contention in the East.
Two more things. I just want to ask you what you thought. I mean, I hate one of, you know, I don't watch a lot of NBA, but one of the things that I've hated for years, all the way back to LeBron and the guys getting together in Miami, is, you know, stars gathering to try to win, and what they're doing in Brooklyn, I'm not a fan of. And I, you know, there's a lot of basketball fans or people that were basketball fans that don't like it either. But is it, I mean, are the Nets going to be able to get there? Are the Nets going to be the team that represents the East?
They have a fantastic chance, Freddie, and having watched Kevin Durant from a distance for years, but then that year with Golden State when he was healthy, he is unbelievable. So if he's healthy and he's right, he absolutely can carry that team. And Kyrie, when he's right, we've seen him go with LeBron and win a title. So they're the odds-on favorite right now. But I can just tell you guys, before that series started, I picked Milwaukee.
Okay.
I think people are sleeping on the Bucks because the Bucks have been under the radar for most of the year, behind the Phillies and behind the Brooklyns. And if Giannis can get that team defensively to play a little bit better, I think the pieces are in place. So that series is going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch. But Freddie, that's something that is not going out of the game anytime soon.
I know.
It's kind of the saddest part. I mean, the stars are going to pair up, and if you don't have a star or two, you don't have a chance.
Well, and that's one of the problems we see with the Bulls. I mean, yeah, they're trying to accumulate stars, but if you can't get them, if you can't get, you know, the group to build together, it's, you know, no matter how good you play during the course of the year, you're not going to be one of the teams remaining at the end.
No question, and that's really the biggest problem, guys, because as we've seen and we've watched for years, there are different levels of stars. I mean, congrats to Zach LaVine. He had a hell of a year. He made the All-Star team. But if you're asking me, do I think that he can be the number one face of a title team? I mean, absolutely not. And again, Vucevic, like, really good player. He's made an All-Star team. He's just not the type of guy I think is a front of a title contender player. And now you've given up all your assets or a vast majority of them in the picks, and this is your group. And I don't think that group is enough, but I understand what they're trying to do because, Freddie, looking back, that Jimmy Butler deal, I know they didn't want to pay him.
Yeah.
But you know, if you had the choice between Jimmy and wanting to recruit guys or Zach yep. LaVine and Vucevic and no picks, I mean, that's a pretty easy decision in hindsight. So there are a lot of what-ifs, but the whole thing to me is the Bulls didn't want to be the team that went to the second round and got bounced. And, Brian, this goes back to what we were talking about. Now they are on track, if they max out what they have in the next couple of years, to be that team that goes to the second round and gets bounced.
Can't argue it. And with Markkanen being on his way out of town, you know, that's part of that Jimmy Butler. He got to draft him, and it looked good for a year anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick, as we let you go, how's life treating you?
Freddie, I am in San Diego.
Oh, boy.
I guess that
I'm
answers
going
it.
To. I'm headed to the Cubs games tomorrow and Wednesday. They actually they threw me on the Nuggets.
Uh-huh.
So I have the Nuggets tonight and through the rest of the series. But it works out because that game is on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I can see the Cubs, and then I've got to go to a wedding in, of all places, Ithaca. So playoff games in San Diego and Ithaca. Things could be way worse, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, they could be. I was glad to talk to you. Oh, as always, we will chat again sometime soon. And keep up the good work.
Nick.
Love hearing
great
you.
Talking to
always
you.
Always good hearing your all's voice. I'll talk to y'all soon.
Take it easy. Nick Friedell, not only a great NBA guy, but just a good all-around guy. And nobody laughs as much as Nick. Absolutely nobody laughs as much as Nick. Earlier in the day, we were talking about the pitchers and doctoring baseballs. And Nick Castellanos, former Cub, a guy a lot of Cub fans wish they would have kept. He had some opinions he gave on the Chris Rose podcast the other day. I want to play those when we come back. You want to jump on in any of the earlier topics we had, 312-332-3776. Fred and Brian, we're here until 6. Then we have NBA playoff action, that Nets-Bucks series, game 2. We've got that one for you here on ESPN 1000.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
So Nick Castellanos is hitting the ball well. The Reds just got done taking 4 straight from the Cardinals. Cardinals have lost 5 in a row. They're 2.5 back of the Cubs and Brewers in the NL Central. Just 3 games tonight. One of them is the Cubs. sending Edmer Elzele against San Diego and Ryan Weathers. Late night baseball on the West Coast, which will be fun to watch. I don't have to get up tomorrow. Well, eventually I have to get up, but yeah, not early. So that'll be fun to watch later on tonight. Elzele's been pitching really, really well. And yesterday, a big game from Hendricks, and we'll talk more about that. If you want to jump in, talk some Cubs and White Sox baseball. We started the show talking about Sox and Cubs baseball. We could end it that way, too. We're here till 6 before NBA basketball. But Castellanos was on the Chris Rose podcast, and he was talking about how Major League Baseball is talking, and a lot of people say, okay, what are they going to do? They're talking about trying to cut back on the pitchers, putting stuff on the ball. And we talked about it. We heard from Liam Hendricks earlier. We heard from Mike Shildt, the manager of the Cardinals. Listen to Nick Castellanos as he talked about it over the weekend.
Here's my thing, right? I look at it from more of a logical standpoint. Is it illegal or is it not illegal to put stuff on the ball?
It's illegal.
It's illegal.
Yeah.
The league obviously knows that they're doing it, but the league doesn't care. They don't care, you know, because if it was really a problem that they wanted, they would figure out how to they'd put people in the bullpen to check gloves, to check hats, to whatever, you know, like the league would do something about it. But honestly, I don't think it's that much I don't think it's that important to them, you know.
Should it be, Nick?
Listen, if I truly start speaking my mind, I usually get in trouble. You know, but it's just the league has to figure out if it wants it to be illegal or not and stick by it, you know, like it's and then for the pitchers to say, you know, like, oh, well, we need it for control so we don't hit you in the head. You know, fine. Drill me. I'm on first base. That helps my OPS and I get paid for that. You know, sacrifice some velocity for some control, you know, but if the league just says like, oh, you know, yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that. But you see pitchers. Just tell us that you don't give a shit. So at least we as hitters, we know, you know, it's obvious, you know, you can see the pitchers that go to their spots or go to their things and go to their gloves and go to their whatever, you know? So I honestly don't pay much attention to it. You know, everybody else about it, but just my frame of mind right now, the moment that I start about it, I give them an advantage and I don't want to give these dudes not one slight advantage over me. So sticky, no sticky. Throw it over the dish. It's going to get hit hard.
I love it.
And I wish he was back with. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I think all Cub fans do. I mean, all he did was come here and hit. And before he came, when I heard he was going to the Cubs, I go, as a Sox fan, you knew that all he did was hit.
Yeah.
He just hit and he hit and he did it with the
that
Cubs.
That mindset is unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
You know, sticky bleep or not, just throw it. Yeah. But here's the deal. If Major League Baseball is trying to manufacture every rule to generate offense,
right?
This is a total disconnect.
Yes.
Why would they not address this? Because it's 80 to 90% and now becomes this next steroid era, you know, taint on the game? Because, you know, let's eliminate the shift or limit the number of shifts you have. I mean, It's all about trying to get guys to hit home runs and put, you know, big time scores on the board, right?
Yeah.
No one wants 2-1, 1-0 anymore. But this is just, he's talking about moving the mound back to help the batters see the ball longer and all that
That's
stuff.
That's just a joke.
I know. Now, meanwhile, I mean, I saw Bill James today. He's talking about, how about this rule proposed? So instead of having a 12 or 14 pitch at bat because the guy's falling off every pitch, right, and staying alive, and I celebrate those when the guy finally, either the pitcher finally gets him called out on strikes or swinging a miss, or the guy ends up doubling or homer and whatever. It's a great battle, right?
Yeah.
He's proposing that you get on the if you got two strikes, you get on the third strike, you get one foul tip. Second foul tip, you're out. Go back to dugout. I mean, okay. Again, is that just to shorten up the game?
Yeah.
I mean, and his argument is that, you know, that the Greg Maddux era back in the day, Greg Maddux said that, you know, when he first started in Major League Baseball, you could throw the pitch 2 inches off the plate and get someone to swing and miss. But by the time he ended his career, guys could fall off. They you know, became good enough that even mediocre hitters were able to stay alive. But if it's all about generating offense, none of this stuff makes sense to me.
No.
It really doesn't.
No. Well, here's the other thing he said, too. when he said the pitchers say they need it so they don't hit you in the head. Well, here's what you do. Then if you can't control your stuff, then you throw it a little bit softer. You don't throw 98 miles an hour. You throw 96 miles an hour. You throw 94 miles an hour. You control it a little bit better. And now maybe the ball gets put in play a little bit more. And the whole thing gets resolved. And baseball gets everything they're looking for. Okay? They get more balls put in play. They get more runs scored. They get more action in games. So I'm still starting to, the more and more I talk about it, the more and more I say it, the more and more I think that this could be the one thing that could actually solve a lot of baseball's problems. Ball not put in play. Len Casper was on the radio the other day, and I heard Len Casper say that he said there was a ball put in play every 12 minutes. It's like, okay, you know, I'm calling the game, and you know there's not balls being put in play.
Right.
And
right.
For people just sitting there watching the game, you know, that's one of the things they need to see. It's so weird because in softball, and you had, you know, just mentioned what Bill James had said about, you know, the foul ball.
Right.
In softball, if you foul the ball off and you get two strikes, it's usually an out, right?
Right, right.
Okay, well, in video games, and I know most people don't play video games. I only, they're my exact, my sit in the basement, do nothing, think of nothing.
Got with your curio table.
Yeah, I'm with my feet up on the curio table, but not on the glass because it might break. there's a MLB The Show. And it's got Fernando Tatis in the cover, which has to, you know, I have to see every single time I turn it on. But they have a thing where you can start with, you start with quick counts. Sometimes you start 1-1. Sometimes it's 1-2. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's 2 balls, 1 strike, whatever. And then you're pitching, so you got to figure it out. You know, in softball, they do that too. There are leagues where you start with a 1-1 count. And, you know, it shortens the time. And people say, well, why don't you just have 2 strikes and, you know, 2 strikes and 3 balls? Well, same thing. It doesn't really matter how you do it. It's, you know, it would be the same thing. But those things are, you know, the moving the mound back makes, I mean, the rubber back makes no sense to me. Because
no.
Pitchers are going to have to throw a little bit different.
Can you imagine, if you're going to move it a foot or more.
Yeah.
You know, their breaking pitch, how long is it going to take them to adapt? It's all of a sudden you're going to pitches land 3 feet in front of the plate because guys have been doing this their whole life.
I know.
To break, you know, have the ball break at the exact spot to cross the plate.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean.
Yeah. We got to take a quick break. Caller's hanging there. We'll get right to you. We will definitely talk about this as soon as we come back. Quick break here. Waddle and Sylvie Show. We got NBA basketball top of the hour here on ESPN 1000.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Baseball needs to be fixed. Right now it looks nice with the Sox and Cubs both on top of their divisions. Cubs share the lead with Milwaukee. They got the Padres, the first of three, starting tonight. Edmer Alzale hits the bump later on this evening. Let's go on out to Rosemont and Bob. Hello, Bob. You're on with Fred and Brian. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Yeah, I wanted to touch base on this subject you're talking about. One of the things is Castellanos' argument about contact. I mean, the bottom line is there's nothing magical about this generation of pitchers over their predecessor generations that suddenly allows such a wide number of pitchers able to throw 100 miles per hour. Bottom line is baseball has fallen in love with velocity from the pitching mound, and their position is we want to enhance that fascination that people have with a guy able to throw 99 to 100, and we're going to allow him to put sticky stuff on the baseball so he can not only throw it hard and fast but also control it. I mean, spin rates are of a level never seen in the history of baseball. And so number one, if you're trying to enhance contact and put the ball in play, you can, on the other hand, allow pitchers to do something that allows them to create movement on the ball that human batters can't be expected to react to. The second point I want to make is baseball banned steroids in one large respect because they didn't want players in the minor leagues and in college using illegal substances that would injure themselves and what they felt they had to take in order to make it to the major leagues. If you've got players at the major league level throwing that hard because they're able to doctor the baseball, You've got players in high school, college, in the minor leagues injuring themselves, feeling that if they don't throw at that speed, they're going to injure themselves. And that's where you've got the rash of pitchers before they reach the majors, already having to have Tommy John surgery because they're trying to replicate curveball spin rates and fastballs at the major league level when the people with whom they're competing are doing it illegally. So it's amazing to me that it's taken this long for baseball to go ahead and curb these practices, not only because they're doing everything else that they think is going to enhance putting the ball in play, but also they're exposing players at the lower levels to injury unnecessarily because they're allowing this to go on for as long as they have. And it's about time that they eliminate this and see who can actually throw a ball at a lower velocity and still control it like they had to do 10, 15 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Bob, a great call, as always. And Brian, it's just like Castellanos said, though. He says MLB talks about it, but they could stop it if they wanted to.
That was one thing that Bob pointed out. They're finally cracking down. They haven't cracked down. They've suspended four minor league pitchers 10 games on June 2nd.
Right.
And now, small sample size, but we talked about at the beginning of the show, guys like Trevor Bauer Clayton Kershaw and Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
Five runs in six innings and five innings pitched. For Cole, that was the most runs, tied for the most runs he'd given up in 12 starts. So that's from June 3rd to today.
Right.
So all of a sudden, these guys who you normally think, you know, they're going to allow one, two runs maybe, all of a sudden it's just coincidence because Josh Donaldson said, no, it's not. He actually called out Garrett Cole and said, hey, look at that. They suspend those guys in the minors, and all of a sudden Garrett Cole looks human.
Yeah.
Right? And you can actually tag him for some runs. So the baseball hasn't cracked down on it. And the Mike Schilt, when we played that, he went off for 10 minutes. We only played a couple minutes of it. He said, you know, baseball's trying to turn a blind eye to this because they don't want to really address it. And meanwhile, pitchers are getting paid. And hitters, and if it's 80 to 90%, other pitchers are probably doing it because they feel like if they don't, they're going to be left behind. It just feeds off itself,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it does. And because of that, you see the batting averages for Major League Baseball at .237, one of the lowest since I think it was 1968. It's crazy. Let's go to Las Vegas and Cullen. You're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Cullen.
Hey, Fred. How are you?
Doing well.
Good to hear from you, bud.
Good, sir.
So I was chatting with my parents yesterday, and my dad was – we were talking Sox baseball because my dad's an old school fan. He was 9 years old when they won the pennant in 59, so he knows a thing or two. And he was complaining, too, about seeing too many strikeouts happening. And so my question to you guys, I'm just trying to get some perspective on this, is it really based on we want to see more ground balls because or is it really pitcher lungs? As Bob, the other caller, correctly pointed out, you know, these guys are throwing so hard and so fast right now. And I can tell you, even from 10 years ago, I was working a team in Iowa, and I'm telling, and these guys were throwing, this was like Carlos Martinez, Colton Wong and stuff that came through. So I saw these pitchers definitely throwing faster and harder. And so, but again, I definitely want to see more small ball and stuff. I'm old school like that. I like that kind of thing, but I also like strikeouts too, but I don't want to see, you know, pitchers' careers cut short as they are right now.
Yeah, and see, Cullen, there'll always be strikeouts. We appreciate the call, as always. There'll always be strikeouts because I was talking to Sean in the other room, and in baseball, when I was growing up, they said, this guy's a really hard thrower. I said, well, that's okay. And then someone says, he's got a great curveball. I said, oh, crap. Because most guys stop playing baseball because they can't hit the curveball. It's not because they can't hit the fastball. So you're always going to get strikeouts for guys that are throwing you curves or splitters. Yeah, Gausman the other day against the Cubs, what did he strike out? 9? And, you know, he used 46, his splitter 46% of the time against the Cubs yesterday. And was it yesterday or 2 days? I had 2 days ago. He used a splitter 46% of the time. And they knew what was coming. It looked so good, but he struck him out, but he was throwing a splitter. He wasn't striking him out with fastballs. Now, he might put something on the ball to get a drop a little bit, but that's
another thing.
That's another thing, right? So you're always going to get the strikeouts. And I don't think they're trying to eliminate strikeouts necessarily. They'd like to get the ball put in play more often. But like Castellanos said, and a lot of other people have said it too, I heard Paul Konerko and Jim Thome on a White Sox Talk podcast, and they said, Konerko said, hey, listen, when I was playing, it was embarrassing to strike out. He goes, now they don't care. They say, just go on up, swing as hard as you can. You make contact, great. If you don't, that's okay. It's an out. At least you didn't hit into a double play.
How about speaking of making contact? How about Grandal yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Was it yesterday or Saturday? 0-for-4, but the four balls he hit, exit velocity of 100 plus.
That was yesterday, yeah.
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 I mean, everyone's caught up in how fast the pitch is coming in, and when you do make contact, how fast the ball's exiting, right?
Yeah.
If it's 80-90%, and I thought that was high, but the more you hear about this,
maybe not.
And I saw, one proposal is have the umpire every half inning go out and check the pitcher.
Yeah.
Now, talking about making games longer, and for all the people who are screaming, it has to be shorter. And where does he look? I mean, does everyone keep the glue in the same spot?
No, no.
I mean, do you have to have it on your hand when you go out there? This glue they use for strongman competitions or to lift cylinder blocks so they don't slip.
They got to do it. It's got to work very easy because think about all the balls they use. If the ball hits the dirt, they throw it out and throw another one
exactly
in.
Right.
So,
exactly right. But, the fact it's on your fingers, you're not going to your mouth anymore because you don't want a mouthful of glue.
Yeah.
I don't believe. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get back to a couple more callers. We'll wrap up some of our poll questions. We got the NBA basketball coming up at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Good news for Cub fans. And this is a guy that when the White Sox had some outfielders hurt, this is a guy whose name came up. Now he's back, going to be back in the Cubs active roster. Jake Marisnyk has been activated. They got Hayward back the other day, and now Marisnyk back today as they open up a 3-game series with the Padres.
Yeah, so. Certainly looked like he belonged before he got hurt.
Yeah.
So, kind of started before Matt Duffy, and certainly now Wisdom. All these guys have come up and fit right in and have really contributed to a team that's all of a sudden hanging on to first place, but first place nonetheless.
Yep, definitely. The Brewers do not play today. They open up a series with the Reds tomorrow. The Cubs open up their series in San Diego tonight with Edmer Alzolay. And hopefully he wasn't the guy using because I guess, and so if he gets rocked today, are we going to think that he was using something?
80-90%.
Yeah,
there'd be a short list of those not. Yeah.
Let's go to Logan Square and Colin. Colin, you're on ESPN 1000. What's happening?
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing well.
Good. I wanted to call in and say that all four major sports, football, basketball, hockey, and except for baseball, the three that I just mentioned all made major rule changes to increase the enjoyment of the game. Football let the forward pass happen. Hockey changed the awful rule about offsides.
Yeah, the two-line pass.
The game stopped every time.
Yeah.
Maybe the single best rule change in the history of sports. And then basketball put the three-point line in. All things that traditionalists or old-school guys probably were not fans of. Until baseball figures out what that is for baseball, the game will continue to decline in popularity.
Here's the other added part of this, too, with legalized betting. I mean, people are wagering and teams partnering with sports books and everything else. Yeah, if this is allowed, this illegal activity is, if you turn a blind eye to it, how do you bet totals? How do you bet an outright winner when certain guys are starting, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just at some point, this is when sports gets involved legally with sports gambling. Before they could just say, well, we don't bet on our sport. We don't want you doing that. But now they're profiting off of it. I mean, at some point fraud becomes involved, right? Because how do I, as a bettor, know who is using it and who isn't using it? And the league's not doing anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Colin, the one problem with what Colin said was the other sports, I'm trying to think, the forward pass long, long time ago.
Yeah.
The 3-point play, I I absolutely hate it because, like I said, the Atlanta Hawks threw 47 of them up the other day. That's
so
that's
every couple of years, it's like, how far do you move it back?
Yeah.
Right?
Hockey's was a great rule because the stoppages for two line passes and things like that was crazy. That was nuts, but that has done wonders for the game. It moves a lot quicker. It moves a lot faster. Brian, you covered hockey. The hockey games, they cut almost a half hour out of hockey games, I think.
Yeah. And they also try to cut down on the fighting. And, the one thing is, the other thing is, I know a lot of it didn't like going to a shootout, but you do. I know you're a soccer guy, but most people don't like going and investing three hours.
Yeah.
And walking home thinking, okay, and you can still improve on that because you still get a point for a tie, right?
Which I'm not. Yeah.
You lose, you lose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, an overtime loss, you should not get rewarded for an overtime loss. You lost the game. There is a way to, if you're not as good a team as the team you're playing, coming away with a point on a tie, in soccer, it's a big thing. On the road,
absolutely.
You come away with a point. It's like, hey, we went into their building. We came away with a point. We made sure they didn't get three. And that's one of the problems, too. In soccer, it's 3 points for a win, one for a tie. And I think that makes it a little bit more meaningful. You get that extra goal, you get 3 points instead of one, and that's why the good teams end up winning. So let's quickly wrap up some of our polls. We only got a little bit more than a minute. Let's do the Sox and Cubs manager grades. What grade won on giving Tony La Russa A, B, C, or D, or F?
The winner was B, 32%.
B, you said B?
B.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how about for David Ross?
For David Ross?
Yeah.
B as well, 48%.
Okay. So I guess it's appropriate. A couple of first place teams, they get B ratings. Anthony,
they actually have gotten. Tony's got a few B ratings.
Yeah,
the fans berate him on Twitter all the time.
Yes, they do. Very good. Anthony Rizzo said the Cubs absolutely could keep him, Chris Bryant, and Javi Baez. How many of those three players you think the team will re-sign? 0, 1, 2, or 3?
Now this is very close race. 37% for 2. One out.
Okay.
That's what Jesse's thinking.
Yeah, that is. And quickly, we got 20 seconds. If the Bulls could keep only one veteran, which one would it be? Satoransky, Temple, Tice, or Young? And I'm pretty sure this is going to be just like the other day.
Yeah, Thaddeus Young was a runaway.
Yeah.
At about 54%.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's the one guy maybe they won't keep. I don't know. Brian, fun as always. I'll talk to you on Saturday.
Yeah, looking forward to it as always. Hope everyone tunes in.
Yeah, thanks to Sean Davis. Thanks to you for listening on ESPN 1000.
It's the classic.
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I'll give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.